is the Cummings case and Mr. Robinson, and I believe Mr. Glass as well, and also Ms. Johnson. Good morning.
Good morning. This case has two major issues that I'd like to address, and one was whether the amendment under 19.2231 that the Commonwealth was allowed to make was properly done, and whether I objected and preserved the issue. This was a building permit case, a lot of fraud charges, forgeries, etc., and a lot of the felonies were dismissed. The client put forward a building permit application to the City of Chesapeake, used his own name, did not forge the name, did not use the name of another, but put on the application Currents Construction, a company he had worked for in the past, but arguably he didn't have permission to use that name again. So the Commonwealth moved to amend the forgery to a misdemeanor, obtaining money under false pretenses. And I objected, and I objected to the amendment and gave reasons why, basically that the elements are quite different. And I think this case starts out from a common sense perspective, that we've gone from a felony forgery, signing someone else's name to a document or a public record, to a misdemeanor fraud charge. And it certainly changes the nature and character of the offense under the case law. Both require intent to fraud, to defraud. One requires receipt of property, and the other requires forgery of, for example, a public record. But I want to bring in some of the ends of justice exception arguments and tie it all together. And I've thought a lot about what a permit is, what is a permit, and who had the property interest of whether a permit is even property at all. I think it's analogous, in a sense, to a revocable license. And the key is that the title and ownership of that permit never passed to my client. And all of the cases state that in order to have a conviction for misdemeanor, for example, obtaining money under false pretenses, title and ownership of quote-unquote property have to pass. And if title and ownership to the property remain in the defrauded party, then you cannot have a conviction for misdemeanor obtaining money under false pretenses. And so I would argue that although my client had temporary possession of the permit and trying to build this lady's pool, that's just temporary, that the title and ownership to the permit, and we're not saying it is property, but let's just assume it is, remain with the City of Chesapeake. And it was always revocable. And I think we cited in the petition under 110.8, revocation of a permit, the building official may revoke a permit or approval issued under this code in the case of any false statement, misrepresentation of fact, abandonment of work, failure to complete construction as required, or incorrect information, etc., supplied by the applicant in the application or construction documents on which the permit or approval was based. And so in the beginning of the case, I argued after a long argument that there was no forgery under the Henry case, which is clearly established, and the judge ruled in my favor. So there was no forgery. But she did allow the Commonwealth to amend it to the misdemeanor obtaining property under false pretenses. Again, if the city, under their own code section, can always revoke the permit, then the defendant, my client, would never have ownership or title to that, and we don't even say it's a property interest, but if it is, to that property. And secondly, as the Attorney General mentioned, what about the piece of paper? It might be worth a penny. But still, we would argue that title to the piece of paper never transferred either, because the city could always revoke that permit, which is sort of like a revocable license.
Can I ask you about that? Because true, the city could revoke it, and true, it's just on a piece of paper. But if your client had not used the business license of another individual without their permission, he never would have gotten the permit in the first place, would he? Because he tried to use another business license. They rejected it. They said it was out of date. And then he brought in the business license from Currents Construction Company. And okay, well, now we'll give you a permit to, or you know, where you can build this pool. So he gets value out of it, doesn't he?
He does get value, but under the Bray case, which is a Court of Appeals case out of 1990, it says the gravamen of the offense is the obtainment of ownership of property. So my argument is he had temporary right to use the permit, and he did, but he never got ownership. He never got title. It always remained with the city, and they could revoke it and say, give me the piece of paper back that's called a permit. Give us that back. And again, it never passed, and that's the gravamen of the offense under the case law and also under the Cunningham case, which is a Virginia Supreme Court case of 1978. It goes through all the elements, and it mentions that an essential element of larceny by false pretenses is that both title to and possession of property must pass from the victim to the defendant. That principle, so long as the defrauded party retains either title or control over the property, the crime of obtaining is not consummated. And it says it has general support both in reason and authority, and it cites the Bates case from Wisconsin. But this is Virginia law. And so I think, as a matter of just common sense, it just doesn't sit right to think that we can go from forgery, a felony, signing a document, which we don't even have that here, because he used his own name. And as the Henry case said, and we've already won on those points, is that you have to actually alter the document itself, which was I kept bringing up in the trial court. But he didn't do that. He just wrote Current's construction. There was evidence that he had had permission in the past to use that, but then I must admit that the witness for the Commonwealth said he didn't have permission on this occasion, so I don't want to be less than candid about that.
On that, I noticed at one point the Commonwealth said, he'd had permission maybe a year and a half ago.
Yes, Your Honor.
When I looked at the dates, it looked like it was only about 6 or 7 months.
That might be. I frankly don't remember the timing. I could refer to the transcript, but you may be correct about that. I can't remember the exact timing. But in the past, he had used the name Current's Construction, and I brought that up at trial. But I think the trial judge felt that since he didn't have it this time, that he shouldn't have done it. But he did use the name.
There was not really confusion, and you're not arguing that it was so recent that there was confusion.
No, sir, Your Honor, I'm not. The other issue, and again, we relate all this to ends of justice, but getting back to the amendment, if you review the appendix in this case on page 193, I said, on second thought, I'll object to any amendment at this point. At the bottom, I said, Your Honor, I don't think the facts are, I mean, there has to be an intent to defraud and use of false pretenses perpetrated, accomplishment. False pretenses must have induced the owner to depart from his property. I'm not sure that the amendment which he is making fits the facts of this case. And then I say on the next page of the appendix, if he's not going to be convicted of forgery, he can't be convicted of the other. I moved to strike, and I was incorporating all of that into my argument. But clearly, it's analogous, and I've really put a lot of thought into what a permit is. It's analogous, I think, to a revocable license that the city can ask for it back, and it's under the city code that they have the right to revoke it for a lot of reasons, including a misstatement of fact. And so I think I brought out in the trial that maybe there was some city code section that was violated and we weren't able to come up with one, making a false statement to get the permit. But that wasn't what he was charged with. He was charged with obtaining property under false pretenses. And this argument whether or not this is property, we don't concede that it is, but if the court finds it was property, then it was clearly the property of the city of Chesapeake. And clearly this changed the nature and character of the offense. To me, common sense says that it should not have been allowed, and the case law would back us up. I'd be glad to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I'm Victoria Johnson, and I represent the Commonwealth. This conviction should be affirmed because There wasn't proper objections at trial. There were not specific objections that raised the argument that the appellant now seeks to raise on appeal. And second, there is no affirmative evidence in the record of innocence or lack of a criminal offense, which is, of course, the standard for a miscarriage of justice. Here, going to pages 193 to 195 in the appendix, which I think is important for my first point, it appears that reading the record, the objection that was made to the amendment was that the facts did not fit the amendment to the obtained by false pretenses, which is more of a sufficiency argument than a character and nature of the offense argument. All of this information that we now have being presented by the appellant regarding, you know, the revocable license and all of that was never made to the trial court. Those arguments were never made. And the court did state to the defense that, you know, this amendment comes as a surprise to you. I will give you time to develop a defense. That's on pages 194 to 195. And the defense did not take the court up on that offer. The defense made a strategic decision to go ahead at that point. So, you know, to the extent that there's any argument that the record is not properly developed or that there wasn't adequate time to make a defense or to develop a defense to the taking element, I submit that that was waived on pages 194 to 195 of the joint appendix. Moving on to the miscarriage of justice argument regarding the taking and whether the permit is a piece of property, the Commonwealth is really relying on the standard of review in this case. This is not a straight-up sufficiency analysis that we see so frequently. Instead, this is a miscarriage of justice analysis. And in a miscarriage of justice analysis, to fall under, you know, that exception to 518, the ends of justice, the record has to show more than just the idea that the Commonwealth failed to prove an element of the offense. You know, that there wasn't sufficient evidence to prove, for instance, a taking, or that there wasn't sufficient evidence to prove that this building permit was a piece of property. And I'm not conceding those points. I'm going to address them in a moment. But there has to be more than just evidence that it wasn't proved. There has to be actual affirmative evidence in the record of innocence, of innocent behavior, and not just innocence of the charged crime, but of innocent behavior. And we don't have this here. As Judge Beals pointed out a moment ago, if the defendant had not used this other business's business license and name, he would not have received the value that he received in this case. He would not have gotten that piece of paper that would enable him to then go build a pool and to, you know, further his business interests that way. And you know, he did that fraudulently. It's adjudicated on the record that he did not have permission from that other business to use their name. He did that falsely. And you know, you can see that there's some forethought in the record, because first he tried to use another business name and it didn't work. So he went to plan B, which was to use this other person's business name without permission. And while there is an argument now that there was no title passed and this building permit is a revocable license, I think that the Commonwealth's theory at trial, looking at page 195, was that the property, the object of the theft or the larceny, was the actual piece of paper, that the permit, because on 195, the prosecutor says, "Judge, I'm prepared to go forward today. There's no evidence presented to as to the value of the permit or how much it costs for application. So with that being said, it would be the misdemeanor." And of course, a misdemeanor theft is anything that has any value. So it's just that piece of paper that I believe is the Commonwealth's theory of the case, the theory of prosecution. And in Hunt, this court, Hunt was a larceny case, but it's very similar. In Hunt, someone was charged with grand larceny for stealing a lottery ticket that was worth $2,500. I cite this case in brief. It was worth $2,500, and the court found that the right to redeem that was a chosen action. So the value for the larceny was not the $2,500. It was the actual piece of paper, that lottery ticket itself, and so it was a misdemeanor larceny. And I submit this case is really controlled by Hunt on that point. You know, he took the piece of paper, and at Appendix 75 to 76, we have the city employee, the permits, the code enforcement employee, saying that he issued the card, the red card, the building permit that would go out on site to the defendant. And I submit that in normal parlance, I issued it to him means I gave it to him because it had to be posted on site, on the construction site. And given that record, I submit to the court that there is not affirmative evidence of innocence here. There is not affirmative evidence that the defendant did not engage in criminal activity such that would warrant reversal under the ends of justice exception. If the court has other questions, I'm happy to answer them, but I believe that the arguments that we have seen, you know, just weren't made to the court. The court did not have an opportunity to intelligently rule upon them. And there just isn't enough on this record to show an affirmatively innocent defendant.
The first assignment error, though, you do concede was preserved, right?
No, Your Honor, I don't. I'm sorry to not concede that, but I do believe that the arguments made at trial were different from the arguments raised on appeal. The argument raised at trial on page 193 to 194 has to do with the sufficiency of the evidence. There has to be an intent to defraud and a false pretense is perpetrated. I believe in the context there, the argument was that the facts of the case did not meet the amendment, that there was insufficient evidence. But on appeal, it's a nature and circumstances argument. And I hope that's clear. Okay, thank you, Your Honor. I ask that you affirm the conviction.
Thank you.
I did not formally reserve time for rebuttal. I don't know if the court.
Well, you had time left. I'm going to give you some time.
Thank you. I just needed to make two comments.
Certainly you may.
Thank you. I just wanted to bring up what I mentioned earlier on page 194 of the appendix, where I said false pretenses must have induced the owner to depart from his property. And I think that's clearly preserving it. And the second thing is the court mentioned he had permission to use it in the past, and there has to be intent to defraud on whether it's the felony or the misdemeanor. And if he thought in his mind that I've had maybe 7-8 months ago or even a year and a half ago permission to use it, just because the witness for the company said that he didn't give him permission on this time, my client in his own mind might have believed that he had permission to use it. And he
I
did.
Thought you just said, though, in answer to my question, that he was not confused about that. That was an argument.
Your Honor, I apologize if I misstated that. And maybe it's being nervous and gotten past me, so I apologize. I really don't know. He may have been. He may not have been. I don't want to mislead the court. But I think it's important here again, and just to reiterate over and over again, that it isn't like he stole some candy from a store and had intentional permanent deprivation of the owner of the property. He didn't go in, put something in his pocket in the store and leave. He's building a pool. And he, I assume, put the building permit up somewhere on the property for public display, or he had it. There's no evidence that he kept it permanently or that they asked for it back, but the point is they had the right to revoke it. And so it's not like a store theft or something traditionally that we see. And it's clear from the case law, and I mentioned this in the trial and preserved it, that title and ownership have to pass for him to be convicted or to have this amendment. I mean, it changes the nature and character of it because you don't have to have title and ownership passing for a forgery. So we've gone from apples to oranges, and I just want to bring that up again. And I'm sorry if I didn't interpret your question correctly, but it just occurred to me. So I did want to bring that up again. I think it's apples and oranges, and I think it's very obvious and common sense oriented that we've changed the nature and character of the offense greatly in this case. Thank you so much.
Any other questions? Thank you. We'll come down and